there is just a there's a point that is important for people to understand, and that is in paradise, there's no need to struggle for one's existence. You just do happily in peace and harmony and joy in the presence of God. And God, after God left the presence, their presence, Adam and Eve's presence, then there is now the requirement for them to labor to live until they die, right? And when there's more human beings on the earth, they find that they can't do everything that they would like to do in their pursuit of happiness, whatever they're having to do, raising families. And they find that others' labor, others, who live around them, their labor can help them, and vice versa. And there just needed to be some type of way to exchange this portion of their life that they were doing, right? The quintessential idea is that you live a very set amount of time while you're alive. You're living through time. We're stuck in this linear time. And so when we're laboring in time, that's time that we're never going to get back, that we're devoting to now the production of this unit of exchange, this exchange item that people call money, that concept, right? So what better unit of exchange is something, other than something that doesn't degrade over time? And precious metals like gold, that is a perfect example. It doesn't degrade over time. It's a product of things outside of the earth, supernova, fusion reactions that occurred in the universe that are still here. And silver isn't as good a unit of exchange. It does tarnish, but it is also used. So silver and gold were the base units. And gold especially, though, is you got to understand that the fruit of the knowledge of the tree was very golden. And the idea of what that fruit was goes back to a lot of the work my brother did, talking about Pyrocydonia, the scientific name of the fruit of the tree, or the fruit of the knowledge of good and evil. And if you look at the quince, you'll find that it is indeed very yellow, very golden. And so the necessity of money came from that, from the Garden of Eden. Again, that focal point that the Masons are fixated on, and so is mythology. It all originates from there. And then the cash is fixed on it as well. But that pyros, that fiery Cydonia fruit, and my brother talked a lot about Cydonia. In Cydonia, the Secret Chronicles of Mars, wrote it so much about it. I won't talk about that, but the important thing I need to say, though, is the quince itself came from the word coin, from the Old English coin, or the Old French coin. And I have an example of some usage of that, calling the quince a coin. And the interesting thing about that word, that etymology, is that it grew from the idea of the separation, again, the pillars, that wedge being placed between man and God. So how perfect is it that now a man or a woman works, and they say to each other, "I have this coin, this thing that actually looks like the Pyrocydonia, right? That caused
Yeah.
all this problem." And they exchange it. "Here's a bit of my life because of what happened in Eden." And you accept it and give them what they need to live. It's a really basic idea. And there's other people that are talking, well, very few others that are talking about it. Specifically, a woman named Anne Barnhart, I believe is her name. The one who burned some bacon on a Quran. She became famous for that. The Latin cunis, or cuneus, means a wedge, and the old French coin from the Latin cunis can mean a wedge or a stamp, a piece of money or a corner or an angle. So the idea of stamping money or taking like a sledge and actually smashing a piece of gold. It's very malleable, so it forms to whatever the die is. Even that act, that putting it on a wedge and coining, is the same word. That word can also mean an exterior angle or wall or other piece of masonry, or a nook, or in the modern French, an interior angle. And from that idea to that word cuneiform, describing the earliest known form of written language or written expression in Sumeria.
Right, yeah.
That word coin is very, very profound. So I think it'd be interesting, you know, if you do any type of, you know, commerce, or there's a lot of people do accept gold right now, you know, they happily accept it. And you give them a $20 gold piece or whatever it is, and you look at them afterwards and say, why are we doing this? But from the idea of a wedge between man and God, and the symbol of what money is, I think the quintessential goddess that personifies this is a goddess named Hecate or Hectate. And the Wiccans are into worshiping Hectate. And I have a picture that probably will appear here now, and it's very peculiar. This is a picture of the triple Hectate. And she's actually been built into a corner angle. It's emerging out of the side of her body. She's wearing on each of her three heads a Phrygian cap, and she has the solar rays coming out of her head. And the etymology of Hectate is interesting. It's Greek, and it's an epithet of Artemis, which is a feminine form, the equivalent feminine form of Hecatos, which in turn is an obscure name for Apollo. It means far shooting, which is another name for Athena, the far shooter, the one that had the ability to destroy from a distance, maybe the goddess of war. She's specifically associated with commerce. And the Greeks used to pray to her, and as well as the Romans, for good luck in making money. And it said that if she receives those type of prayers favorably, that you will be granted money, you will become rich. So they'd have statues of Hecate built into their businesses. And it's interesting because the Muslims and the association with ISIS and Hectate, and the reason the Muslim flag looks like it does. And I won't get into that story, but it's in the book, and it fits very well. And it's the irony of the ISIS phenomenon right now.
Right, and yeah.
The irony of it going on right around the city of Nineveh is very interesting to me. But going on from there, continue with the concept of money. Our United States really did understand the essence of money back when it was established. And the founding fathers that people say were very devout and Christian, I can't really argue with that. I mean, it's to say that they were anything but that, to most people, is sacrilege. I mean, how can you? That is anti-American, and you're a terrorist or whatever the modern thing is now. They call people that say things that denigrate the founding fathers. But I'm not doing that. I'm being someone who thinks freely and thinks, I believe, rationally, and then looks at the whole picture. And what I see there are, I see that they were high-level Freemasons, many of them. And if that is the case, and they were acting on what Sir Francis Bacon and John Dee were excited about, right? Establishing the New World for a very peculiar and particular purpose, as Manly P. Hall said. They knew exactly what they were doing. They were operating in a hermetic fashion. And this is complex, and this is difficult for a lot of people to understand. And this is a very Nikeshian sort of game that's being played. What they do is they establish the United States. They establish something first under the law of God, the facade that they are holy. Of course, you can't join a Masonic fraternity unless you believe in a creator. Then maybe they were understanding Christians, or Christians that did really have love for their God, had love for Christ, right? And maybe that changeover happened later, or maybe they never had, I don't know. But they were high level Masons, and they did establish this country under, basically, if you go back, their Judeo-Christian values. It's almost as if that it's done so that Satan, right, the Nakesh, the serpent, can say, "Well, look at how this nation was established under your law, and look what happened. Look how it didn't work," which is ridiculous, but it's MO, the mode to do it, to get it to this point that we're at right now. And as if to prove, that Nikesh is trying to do it, that God has, one God doesn't have it under control somehow. Manly P. Hall, I think I'll read this by him. It's from The Secret Teaching of All Ages that he wrote in 1928. And he said the European mysticism was not dead at the time the United States of America was founded. The hand of the mysteries controlled in the establishment of the new government for the signature of the mysteries may still be seen in the Great Seal of the United States of America. Not only were many of the founders of the United States government Masons, but they received aid from a secret and august body existing in Europe, which helped them to establish this country for a peculiar and particular purpose, known only to the initiated few. So, the idea that the Freemasons were establishing this nation under God, it wasn't quite the way that they were planning. They were excited about the establishment of this nation, but for that peculiar and particular purpose, that was the goal. And what that peculiar purpose is, if you tell someone, they'll look at you like you're crazy.
Right,
But
yeah.
after you're done reading my book, maybe you'll believe what their purpose is a little bit more. Or if you didn't have any idea, you'll definitely believe. Maybe if you didn't have any idea, it may work on you. If you did have an idea, I think you'll definitely understand and believe that it's going to occur. I believe it's going to occur eventually. I don't believe that the United States is going to get any better before it gets any worse. Anyway, at the beginning, there are documents that stated, that they understood the essence of money, that the debasement of the coinage that they're making, that the people of the United States were in control over, was an act of murder, because they're tokens of human life. If someone is debasing them, they're taking life in a different way, but it's taking human life, never, nonetheless. And the penalty on debasing coins, section 19, says that if anybody's guilty of that type of offense, they shall suffer death if they're found guilty of embezzlement or fraudulent. I mean, if they're doing any of that, they die.
Wow.
And I think that's maybe a little bit severe, but that's they
Yeah.
understood the essence of money back then. They don't anymore. We're under the control of the Nikeshian system of commerce,
Yeah.
and It's controlled by the, as Smelly P. Hall said, an august group, a very elite and not very large group, who have the as their big crime boss or the big mom, the big Yakuza boss at the top, Nikesh himself. But the thing that's going on now with our currency is that it's a talisman. And a talisman, the word tala just means to consecrate. And that's because when a magician would make it, or an alchemist would make the magical item, they had to wait till the time was right. The stars were aligned correctly, and the planets were in the correct positions, and there was the correct season, and they invoked the correct god or goddess to instill the power into it. And they had to understand what that power was, how to use it, and how to direct that power over another individual. And the power of the talisman is all dependent on the way it's made. Of course, as I have said, but also the way it looks, the symbol of it. And an excellent example of a talisman is the Great Seal of the United States. And of course, I have an old silver certificate. When I was little, I think my dad had a couple in encyclopedia, and he actually showed one to me before I could understand really what he was saying. He said, "You can exchange this for silver. It's not like what you have in your hand." And that's how money really got started. This paper money. It's, well, you don't want to be carrying that heavy metal around, right? So give it to us. We'll keep it in the vault for you, right? And we'll exchange. We'll give you these light pieces of paper. Yeah, I guess before I start saying anything about that, but the power of the talisman needs to be directed over people by people that understand its power and have something, some part in the creation of it. So the dollars that we have right now are nothing more than that magic being controlling, that magic controlling the whole earth right now. How that came about is quite interesting, but I'll go into the dollar right now. The word dollar comes from Saint Joaquin Taller, the Valley of Joaquin, or Saint Joaquin, and there's a big silver strike there, and they started minting a lot of silver pieces, and they shortened the name so that they were just called Taylors. And Taylor sort of sounds like dollar. That's where that came from. But the first currency was known as a dollar in the US, well, were the pesos, or the pieces of eight. And they were named pieces of eight because they were worth 8 Spanish reals or royals. And they were minted starting after the currency reform of 1497. That was instituted by King Ferdinand and Queen Isabella, same people that funded Christopher Columbus and the Pinta Nina and Santa Maria Marina. And the peso became the first world currency in the late 1700s, and they were used in the United States, or the New World, until the Coinage Act here in 1857, which outlawed the use of the pieces of eight as legal tender. We had to start minting our own. And the Americans called the pieces of eight, though, up to that time, pillar dollars, because they had two pillars on the front side, I believe. And these were the depiction of the pillars of Hercules. And people knew what these were because Sir Francis Bacon had put them at the front of his new book. It was called the New Instrument, or the Novum Organum. And I think that was published in 1620. And I think I said before also that Francis Bacon was a very high level Freemason.
Yeah.
It was of the Rosicrucian Masonic Order. He along with John Dee, I think, were very some of the or one. Two of the most influential Masons in Europe, whoever lived. But they were both very pro starting the new world. It was almost as if they knew that something great would happen, which is very diabolical. Not something, of course, that they knew that would happen even in their lifetime or even generations later. I mean, it'd be way down the road. But that idea of pillars and money still accentuate the idea of where money came from, the need for money, the garden and the separation event, that wedge idea. And you will actually see the pillar, you actually could see the pillar and the silver certificate, I think, that were issued in from 1928 to 1957. They had pillars on both ends of the dollar bill on the front where the one was, and they took those away eventually. But you saw that even on the dollar, and that was at a time when you could still exchange a dollar for the amount written on it for silver. And the power of the talisman was added to the dollar in a very sneaky fashion. The Great Seal was added in 35 by Franklin Delano Roosevelt. And he was a Freemason. And I'm sure people know that. I think
Right.
Roosevelt means Field of Roses, which is a very hermetic meaning for the name of a president. But in 64, the dollar was just simply no longer redeemable. I mean, you could not get the same amount of silver for it. Now, it was completely, people relied on this money, this currency that they made, this nothingness, this magic talisman. It had the full power of the talisman. Now people exchanged it for the same type of things they used to, for the ones that were exchangeable for the precious metal that they represented, and that's taken away completely, and they still operate in the same fashion. But now that gives the private entity controlled by the august few elite the power to do whatever they want. They can print as many of these talisman as they want and murder men on a scale unforeseen in history, but people don't even realize it. When they're inflating your money, they're murdering you
Yeah.
and your family and your children and their children, and people are fine with it. Ask someone if, throw these concepts at someone and they'll scoff, but ask them the question, why hasn't the $1 bill been radically altered in its appearance? You don't want to affect the magic. You don't want to alter the effect of the talisman because that power is being directed over you. It's controlling you. You're spending your finite amount of life working for it, for them. They have very, well, it has control. And
Yeah.
it's only going to get more severe until we come to the chaos that we're needing here. It's going to eventually get to. But it leads to sort of the beginning of this idea of the eradication of the way commerce is carried out. People say, well, I mean, that will never happen. We go to a barter economy or whatever. Well, first you need a great amount of control over the whole world, and that's occurring more quickly than people realize. And you need a calamity, you need chaos, and you need people to look up for somebody to save them.
Yeah.
And say, we'll give up all our freedom for the safety that you provide. You see that happening all over and over and over again, but it's going to happen in a really huge, stepped-up fashion. And then commerce will be eliminated, and where not necessarily eliminated, but there'll be a new form of it that depends on worship of the Nakash exclusively, and always a fixation or a remembrance of who he is and what he did for man at that period of time when the old way is done. He's put his paradise on earth. So I'm digressing again.